So I'm here for 3 days. I'll be leaving, I think, on Wednesday afternoon. So tomorrow morning, in the mornings, I'll be doing the Bhagavatam class. But in the evenings, we'll be doing a special seminar called Srila Prabhupada, the Living Bhagavatam. So what I've done is I was fortunate enough to travel with Srila Prabhupada from November 1975 until March of 1977. So that was a period of about 16 months. And during that period, I was keeping a diary, some written notes, a little bit every day, what Prabhupada was doing, who he was seeing, what he was saying, where we were traveling to, all his activities as much as possible. And at the same time, we were recording as much as possible, all the conversations and lectures, etc. Then later on, from the Bhaktivedanta archives, I was able to obtain copies of all of the letters that Srila Prabhupada had written, as well as all the letters that were written to him. So with those three sources, my original handwritten diary, the recorded material, and the correspondence of Srila Prabhupada, then I was able to compile what became known as the Transcendental Diary, which is a series of books. Right now there's 5 volumes. I just produced the 5th volume this year, and there'll be 2 more volumes. So generally each volume is about 600 pages, and it covers a 2-month period of Prabhupada's activities, his leelas. So from that material, then what I did was I decided to take things by topic. So there are different items of devotional service, just like there's chanting, there's cleanliness, there's taking prasadam, there's book writing, there's living in the Dham, there's health, like that. So many different topics. And then whatever Prabhupada said or did in relation to that topic, then I've compiled that into this seminar. And the seminar is called Srila Prabhupada, the Living Bhagavatam. So the idea is that when I first joined Prabhupada's party, as I say, that was late November 75, and I was actually added to Prabhupada's party. First of all, I was asked just to do his massages for a few days. Then when we got to Vrindavan in early December, December the 2nd, then I was actually given the full-time servant's duties as well as the massage. So I have a very distinct memory of that first day that we were in Vrindavan. I'd moved into Prabhupada's quarters, and Prabhupada was holding a darshan in the afternoon. And I was observing him very closely. And I had a very, very distinct and strong realization that as I was seeing Srila Prabhupada, I was seeing a living, breathing Bhagavatam. That everything that I'd ever read about Krishna consciousness in Prabhupada's books, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, I was seeing in Srila Prabhupada's personality in an instant. So by reading Prabhupada's books, then you get gradual realization. You read and you experience a little bit, and you know, it takes some time. But by studying, you can understand Krishna consciousness, but the real realization of it may take quite a while. I think in cases like my own, probably a few lifetimes. You know, because Krishna consciousness is very deep. And to know what it means to be Krishna conscious, you know, that we learn practically by experience, by practice, and, you know, over the course of time. But seeing Srila Prabhupada, I saw Krishna consciousness, the perfection of Krishna consciousness, what it means to be a Krishna conscious person, there in an instant, in his personality and his character, in the way that he spoke with people, in the way that he preached, in the way that he dealt with practical managerial matters in his society, in the way that he relaxed, in the way that he conducted his own daily activities, how he controlled his senses perfectly. Everything about him was all the very epitome of Krishna consciousness. So I just realized if I observe Srila Prabhupada every day, as closely as possible. Then I'll understand everything about Krishna consciousness, what it means to be or to become Krishna conscious. So I just made a resolve within myself that I would try to spend as much time as possible just observing Srila Prabhupada. So whenever Prabhupada was meeting people, I was in the room. Whenever he was going somewhere, I was with him. Because I was with him anyway as his servant, I had to massage him every day, twice a day. I was with him late at night. I was with him early in the morning. Like that. So it was a unique opportunity. And then after that, after Prabhupada's disappearance, I had this diary. I had been keeping the diary originally as a personal memento more than anything. On the first night that I'd been asked to give Prabhupada his massage, this was on the 26th of November in 75, we were in New Delhi. The temple there was about the same size as this one, very small, but nice. Their deities, Shushri Radha Paratasarati. And the first night after I'd been taken into Prabhupada's bedroom and shown how to do his evening massage, when I came out, then I went down the road and there was a little bookstore there, the new janitor bookstore, and I bought a little notebook. And I was thinking that now if I keep some notes, because actually I was only supposed to be massaging Prabhupada for 2 or 3 days. That was the original plan. But I thought, you know, this is such a unique opportunity to render personal service to a person like Srila Prabhupada. You probably don't get that chance in many lifetimes. So I thought, I'm going to write this down just so that in 10 or 20 years' time I can read these notes and I'll remember, you know, what I did when I was with Prabhupada. So that was the original intention. A little bit later, after some months, I started to realize actually this is a historical document. You know, that here's a personality who's actually going to change the world. And, you know, I'm in this unique position of being able to observe that at close quarters. So I became a bit more serious and conscientious about writing what was happening. Then after I left Prabhupada's party in 1977, and then Prabhupada left us at the end of 1977, I remember having a conversation with Tamal Krishna Goswami, who had come on in February of 1977 as Prabhupada's personal secretary, permanent secretary, and he was with Prabhupada right until the end. So when I left the party in March, Prabhupada sent me back to Australia. On the last day that I was there, I gave Prabhupada his massage and then I was leaving. I suddenly realized, now who's going to keep this record? You know, I've been keeping this diary, but who's going to keep it now? And I was thinking also that previously there had been so many servants and so many secretaries, but what did we know about Srila Prabhupada? What did we know what he was doing on a daily basis? They had not kept any records, practically. Satsarup Maharaj a little bit, but Shrutakirti Prabhu was with Prabhupada for 2 years. But nobody, we didn't know at that time anything practically of what had gone on during that period. So I was concerned and I went to Tamal Krishna Maharaj and I told him, I said, Maharaj, I've been keeping this diary and now I'm leaving. So I think that you have to keep a diary. Now you've just come on as the secretary, so you have to keep a regular diary of Prabhupada's activities. So initially he was a bit reluctant because he said, well, no, I'm really busy. There's so many things that we have to do. At that time, Prabhupada had gotten really, really sick and he never really recovered from that illness actually. From March 77, basically his body just steadily deteriorated. So he was very, very busy. But I told him, I became a little alarmed when he showed some reluctance. So I pressed the point really strongly. I said, no, I said, you have to do this because nobody will know what Prabhupada's doing and what happens unless you write this down. So I said, you know, this is a historical record. You have to keep it. So he said, well, I'll try. So anyway, I went off. Then, of course, now we have Tamal Krishna Maharaj's diary, TKG's diary. It's been published. So you'll see that he didn't start keeping his diary until about mid-April. So there was about a month's gap between my leaving the party and telling him this and him actually doing it. But at some point, it actually clicked with him that, you know, I have to start writing something. So he did it. So he kept his diary up to the very end. So in 78, we were at Vrindavan. We were on our way to Mayapur for the first GBC meeting after Srila Prabhupada's disappearance. So we were talking, and then he asked me, he said, "So, what are you going to do with your diary?" So I said, "Well, I'm going to, you know, eventually I'm going to write it into a book and publish it, because I think, you know, the experiences that I had with Srila Prabhupada, I think that all the devotees should, you know, have a chance to experience that too." You know, Prabhupada was the guru of so many devotees, but so many of them didn't have that opportunity to see him close up. So I want to, you know, extend that association that I had and give everybody else the opportunity to share it. So I said, "What are you going to do with yours?" So I said, "Well, I'm not going to publish it." So we laughed. I said, "No, come on, you have to. You know, this is Prabhupada. Everybody has a right, you know, to know what he was doing and saying and so many things." So he laughed. He said, "Okay." He said, "Maybe." He said, "But at any rate, I'm not going to publish mine until you finish publishing yours." So that was where we left it. So anyway, it took me 10 years till I got to the point where I actually started work on that project. And in 92, I actually came out with the first volume. And then three more volumes. Hare Krishna. Three more volumes. Up to 1996. Then I took a little break for about 6 years. It was supposed to be 1 year, but somehow or another I got distracted. And writing is it's the kind of a discipline that if you lose your rhythm, sometimes it's very difficult to get back into. So it took me about 6 years to get back into writing again. But in 2003 I took it up again, and then we got this new volume out this year. And I'm continuing on now. So anyway, that's there. And so that was my intent, that the devotees should know how Prabhupada was conducting his Krishna conscious lifestyle, so that we can, you know, understand it very practically. So then I got this idea for this seminar, doing things by topic, not, you know, chronologically as the diary is, but taking a particular topic and looking, you know, very focused look at how Prabhupada was dealing with these particular items of devotional service. So I was just in Ljubljana for a few days, so we did the segment on chanting. And then I was just in Zagreb for Janmashtami and Vyasa Puja, and we discussed about writing books, Prabhupada's writing books and his instructions and his encouragement to his disciples to write books. So I thought, since we're here now, and this is the Sunday feast, then we could talk about prasadam, because prasadam is always a very popular topic. And of course it's one of the main means that Prabhupada used for spreading Krishna consciousness. There's a lot of devotees that I know that became devotees because they like prasadam. Somehow or another, you know, they started coming to the Sunday feast and they became attracted to the prasadam, so they couldn't stay away, and then they became devotees. So we'll read a little bit now. Now it's already 6:45. I was supposed to talk until 7 o'clock, but if you like, we can talk a little longer. And we'll see how it goes. And then we'll take up in the evenings, tomorrow evening and Tuesday evening, and maybe Wednesday morning. We'll see how it goes. So anyway, so this is the seminar, Srila Prabhupada, the Living Bhagavatam. So prasadam. So it was the first, practically the first thing that I learnt when I joined Srila Prabhupada's party, was the importance that he put on prasadam distribution. I had gone into Delhi on some private business when Prabhupada had arrived there on November 25th. And somehow or another, Gopal Krishna Maharaj, who was an adhikari at that time, he saw me there, so he asked me, "Why don't you stay in Delhi for a couple of days and you can be Prabhupada's door guard. So I thought, great, you know, good opportunity. I'll stay for a few days, I'll get to see Srila Prabhupada in his rooms. If I'm there at the door, then at some point I'm sure to see him, you know, going past the doorway or coming in and out. There'll be the darshan in the afternoon, so that will be very nice. So I was sitting outside his door. So then in the afternoon, Prabhupada used to have an open darshan, and anybody could come. And of course in India, people are very inclined. As soon as they know there's a saintly person, sannyasi, then they'll come and they'll see them. Generally not much happens. They'll come in, they'll sit down, and they sit and look at you. And they'll sit for 15 minutes, a half an hour, just looking. And then after that, then they'll go. They've been very happy that they've seen a saintly person, and off they go. So that the people are kind of pious. They're like that. So Srila Prabhupada, of course, even if he was speaking philosophy, he knew that inevitably for most people that came, they wouldn't really understand, you know, what he was talking about. Philosophy is, you know, requires a bit of depth and, you know, attention. So in order to ensure that they made some solid spiritual advancement, he would always insist that there must be prasadam distribution whenever there is a gathering of devotees. It was a must. And he would become quite upset if that arrangement wasn't made. So that was my first duty, was to sit at the door with a jar of sweets, and anybody that came in or out, I had to make sure that they got some prasadam. Prabhupada was very attentive about that, and he would ask about it. So that was how I started off doing some service for Prabhupada, giving out the prasadam. So later on, because that was in Delhi, the same thing in Vrindavan when we went there, many, many people would come to see Prabhupada in the afternoons in Vrindavan. Usually at least 50, 60 people would attend his afternoon darshans, and we would sit there and give out these sweets. So later on, about a month after I'd first joined the party, this was December 25th, 1975, Prabhupada flew up to Ahmedabad in Gujarat, which is just kind of north of Bombay. And then we drove to a village called, well, a small town called Sanand. And Srila Prabhupada had been invited to hold a five-day pandal at this village. There was a population of about 21,000 people. Prabhupada had been invited by the Maharaj of Sanand. There was still in India now, even you'll see there are still some Maharajas, some of the kings, but they have no power actually. But locally, at least they still have a little influence. They're generally, you know, the aristocratic families of the areas that they live in. So this man, the king of Sanand, he was very fond of inviting saintly persons to come and speak to the people in his town. So we were staying at the Maharaj of Sanand's palace. And the first day that we got there, 8:30 p.m., Prabhupada went to the grounds. There was an open fairground area. Prabhupada went there to lecture. About 5,000 people turned up, which was impressive for a town with a population of only 21,000. So after a brief kirtan, Prabhupada gave a well-received 50-minute discourse in Hindi, which Yasamadi Nandana Das translated into Gujarati. Then Prabhupada left, and on the way out of the pandal area, Prabhupada stopped the car at the entrance, and he asked whether the visitors were being given prasadam. So after he'd given this lecture, it was late at night, we were going out, but he stopped the car, and that was what he wanted to know. That was what was on his mind. So he was shown some small white sugar beads, which people are generally given at various temples. Just some simple thing. It's like some kind of bubbled up sugar, and then crystallized little beads. So Prabhupada wasn't very impressed, but he seemed to think that it was better than nothing. And we arrived back at the palace by 10:30 p.m. So the next morning, December 26, we had gone on a morning walk. And that area of Gujarat, they were growing mainly tobacco, cash crops. So Prabhupada had quite a bit to say about cash cropping. and the foolishness of you know, the logic of it, that you buy a crop that you can't, I mean, you grow a crop that you can't use in your own local area, you send it hundreds of miles or maybe thousands of miles away to a market where you have no control over the price structure. Then you get some money, and with that money you buy the same food that you could have grown in your own land. So, you know, very illogical, and Prabhupada was quite critical of that. So anyway, the talk of crops also brought up the question of prasadam distribution at the programs. Prabhupada is very keen to see that sumptuous prasadam is given out whenever we hold a gathering. He said that otherwise, ordinary people will not be attracted. Although lecturing very strongly every day, he is aware that what he says will inevitably go over the heads of most of the people. Therefore, he told the local devotees, "So accept this program, distribution of prasadam. Then we can go everywhere, whole day, whole program, kirtan, and prasadam distribution. Simply dry philosophy, what will people understand?" So he's talking about his own speaking. Yeah. He's the one that's speaking, but he's saying, dry philosophy, what will people understand? That's the way that people take it. They come and they sit, but not much goes in. So you have to give them something tangible, and therefore Prabhupada said you attract them with very sumptuous prasadam. So he wasn't that happy with the little white sugar beets. And therefore he was making a point of it. So he always encouraged the devotees in this program, kirtan and prasadam distribution. This was like a two-pronged attack on Maya. Yeah, if you let people hear the holy name, you let them taste Krishna prasadam, then their spiritual life will begin very positively, and their material life will be finished. That was his program. So, on December the 17th, 1975, he got a letter from Mahamsa Swami, who was preaching in South India. Mahamsa was an Indian, but he was a Parsi. Parsi community, they originally came from Persia, and they settled mainly in Bombay. And they're really not part of the Vedic culture. They're meat eaters and like this. That's their culture. So anyway, Mahamsa, he had come from that community, but he was preaching in South India, in Hyderabad, and he had sent Prabhupada a report on the Hyderabad temple. At that time they were just constructing it, and later on, actually, in 1976, on Janmashtami, Prabhupada actually opened that temple in Hyderabad. So Mahamsa was giving a progress report, and then he gave another report about a small bullock cart traveling Sankirtan party. So some of the devotees, they got a small cart. You see them all over in India. And a couple of bullocks, and off they went, and they were doing some preaching. So Mahamsa wrote, "The bullock cart party, only three devotees, were very successful on their second attempt. They collected lots of rice, distributed prasadam and small literatures, and held evening programs, and they are sleeping under a different tree every night. They are thrilled and so enthusiastic. They love this kind of preaching work, so now I'm giving them a portable sound system and more equipment and one more devotee, and I am sending them immediately on a massive voyage on bullock cart all the way to the Mayapur festival." So this is like maybe, I don't know, 1500 miles or something. It's a long way from down in South India up to West Bengal. And they actually made it. They arrived there just in time for the Gaupurnima festival in 76. So Prabhupada replied enthusiastically, "Naturally, the Sankirtan men traveling with the bullock carts are blissful. It is Lord Chaitanya's engagement. Lord Chaitanya personally traveled all over India for 6 years. His program was simply kirtan and prasadam distribution. Lord Chaitanya never spoke philosophy in public. When he met big scholars like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he spoke philosophy. Otherwise, for the mass of people, kirtan and prasadam distribution. So, continue this program. It is very pleasing to Lord Chaitanya." So that was some encouragement that Prabhupada gave for that program. So, Prabhupada was very expert at entertaining guests. When people would come, special guests, then sometimes he would entertain them, and that, you know, a major part of that entertainment was feeding them nicely. There's a whole science that if you feed somebody nicely, they become your friend. Even if they don't agree with your philosophy, but if you please their tongue, then they become your friend. So Prabhupada knew that. So there was one man who Prabhupada had met in the Delhi airport. We were flying down to Bombay, and this man came over and introduced himself. His name was Mr. Chowdhury. So it turned out this man was working in the Writers' Building in Calcutta. Writers' Building is the secretariat for the West Bengal government. All the public servants are there. All the important ministries are there. The chief minister has his office in this Writers' Building. So this man was actually... he was situated in the land department of the West Bengal government. And Srila Prabhupada was just developing a scheme for Mayapur, which involved obtaining at least 350 acres of land. So he decided that he would apply to the government to have them acquire the land for us. Acquiring the land means that the government decides, yes, this project is very important, and they should be given the area that they require. So then they come in and then they order the landowners, now you must sell the land, and they fix the price. So then it stops any inflation and it enables that project to go ahead. So that was Prabhupada's idea. In India, of course, since 1947, they have this Land Sealing Act. Previously there were big zamindars or landowners, and people, you know, poor people, it was like a feudal system, similar to what we used to have in Europe, with a few big landowners, and then many people, you know, living on their land, virtually kind of enslaved, you know, because they had no choice. So to break that, then in 1947, when India got independence, they passed a law that nobody is allowed to own more than 17 acres of land in the rural districts. So that's called the Land Sealing Act. It means you can't have more than that amount of land. So we wanted 350 acres so that we can develop the Mayapur project and build a spiritual city there. So Prabhupada thought if we can get the government to sanction this acquisition, then we'll be able to overcome this Land Sealing Act. So he took it that this was Krishna's arrangement, that just when he was contemplating this land acquisition, we meet this man, Mr. Chowdhury, who works in the land department in the government in West Bengal. So Prabhupada was very keen to follow up on the contact that he got there in the Delhi airport. So he then wrote then, on December 27th, Prabhupada requested Jayapataka Maharaj by mail to visit Mr. Chowdhury personally with prasadam and flowers and to invite him to Mayapur. He wants Jayapataka to try to enlist his help in getting the government to acquire the land for our ISKCON Mayapur development scheme. He also suggested that Mr. Chowdhury might be held to help Jayapataka Maharaj, an American, with his application for Indian citizenship. Because Jayapataka Maharaj did eventually become an Indian citizen. I don't know whether Mr. Chowdhury helped him, but anyway, it was an opportunity. So on February the 1st, 1976, Prabhupada was in Mayapur. We had gone there in preparation for the Gaur Purnima festival. And Jayapataka had gone into Calcutta. He had met Mr. Chowdhury, given him some prasadam, and invited him to Mayapur to meet Srila Prabhupada. So as promised, Mr. Chowdhury and family arrived. Srila Prabhupada happily received him, like a father receiving his son. Prabhupada showed him the plans for the Vedic city and the land which he wants the government to acquire for the project. Then with Jayapataka Swami, he took him over the entire compound. Mr. Chowdhury promised to help Jayapataka Maharaj in every way possible to get the application approved. He clearly has the highest regard for Srila Prabhupada and was impressed with the Mayapur project. His wife was even more enthusiastic, and she challenged her husband that if he is truly a Hindu, then he must help Srila Prabhupada. Mr. and Mrs. Chowdhury took lunch on the balcony. As we served them sumptuous prasadam, Prabhupada sat to the side in a chair, hosting them graciously. So he didn't eat, but they were eating. And while they ate, he kept the conversation light and jolly, thus allowing them to eat without distraction. So this is an art. This was the first time that I'd seen Prabhupada do it. That when you're entertaining someone, you feed them nicely. You don't hit them with heavy, you know, philosophy or controversial topics, so that, you know, they become all disturbed and then they can't enjoy the prasadam. No, you let them enjoy the prasadam, and at the same time, whilst they're in a congenial mood, then, you know, make some light conversation and be jolly and friendly with them. So then that increases the feeling of obligation that they have to you. So Prabhupada was very expert at entertaining people using prasadam. So that was one example. Another example of Prabhupada entertaining somebody, an important person, was when he had gone to Bhaktivedanta Manor in England in July of 1976, and Prabhupada had written to George Harrison inviting him to come and see him at the manor. Of course, the manor was given to us by George, and so Prabhupada, you know, wrote to him and said, "I'm coming, if you'd like, you can come and see me." So George accepted, and on July 26, then George actually came to the manor. What had happened was that when we left New York and flew to London a few days before, Prabhupada had gotten very, very sick. He actually had like the flu when he left New York. So traveling on the aeroplane completely ruined his health for a few days. When we arrived in London, he couldn't basically do anything except just take rest. And he was kind of resting up for about 3 days. He wasn't meeting anyone and he wasn't having any programs. He was beginning to recuperate a little bit by the time George came on the 26th. So Prabhupada told me, "Now, I'm taking rest. If George comes, then you come in and you wake me up." Now, we had a standing rule that if Srila Prabhupada was asleep, then he wasn't to be awoken for any reason whatsoever. It didn't matter if the Queen of England walked in. She would not have been allowed to see him. You know, Prabhupada's health was very important. And so when he was resting, nobody disturbed him. But he told me, "Now, if George comes, then you wake me up." So George came about 2 o'clock. Prabhupada was resting in bed when he arrived. There's a standing rule that Srila Prabhupada is never to be woken for any reason. But for George, Prabhupada made an exception. I went into the bedroom and informed him that George had arrived. "Yes, bring him in immediately," he said. And then rather than coming into the sitting room, he sat up in bed and had George come into the bedroom. So I thought Prabhupada, you know, he'll get up and he'll go and sit in the big room there. And the devotees had actually been preparing a nice feast for when George was going to come. And then Prabhupada just, you know, he sat up in bed. He said, "No, bring him in." So we brought George into the bedroom and there was Guru Das, there was Mukunda Maharaj, Jaitirtha was the GBC, and there were a few other senior devotees there. So they all came in. And then Prabhupada just sat up in bed. He told George, "Now sit down and, you know, have you eaten?" "No." "Okay, so bring all the prasadam." So he had to serve out George in the bedroom there. George was sitting down. He had a little table. A few of the other devotees ate with him. And as George was eating and the devotees were serving out, then Prabhupada was keeping up like a running conversation with him. So when he entered, Prabhupada had a seat brought for him and instructed us to feed him prasadam. We set up small tables for George and some of the senior men, and Prabhupada engaged him in light conversation as they ate. All the while, Prabhupada attentively supervised the serving of the prasadam. Noticing which preparations George had a taste for, he told us to give him more. At the same time, he kept him at ease with sweet words. "Hare Krishna. Ha, now give him 2 more samosas. He likes it." "Yes, all the boys and girls are so nicely qualified for Krishna's service." George expressed pleasure at seeing his old friends. "They're looking better and better all the time. It's nice for me to see Gurudas. He's turning into a mountain." Gurudas was quite big. So when George had first met him in 69, he was fairly slim, but when he saw him in 76, he was quite big. So he's saying he was turning into a mountain. Prasadam. George ate steadily with Prabhupada, ensuring that he had enough. When he offered him some more samosas, George laughed. Ah, I've got plenty, thank you. Prabhupada also laughed. Prasadam, we can eat it up to the neck. There is no harm. You'll never get indigestion. You have some fruits? Prabhupada continued to encourage him, offering cauliflower, milk, mango drink, and other preparations. Just take a little. George was doing his best, responding warmly to Prabhupada's hospitality. I can't finish, he laughed. He said that he had been sick with jaundice recently. He had turned yellow and his liver had been affected. He thought that he had contracted it from eating some Chinese takeaway food. That's what you get when you don't take prasadam. So Prabhupada advised him to cook simple foods for himself. As conversations are wont to do, theirs meandered from one subject to another. Prabhupada mentioned our growing number of Govinda's restaurants, and he asked George if he had met Ambarish Prabhu. So the month before, Prabhupada had been in Detroit, and he had met with Ambarish and Shrutakirti Prabhus, and they were proposing to open a restaurant in Boston. So now Prabhupada, that was on Prabhupada's mind, and he asked George, do you know Ambarish? He also filled him in on the successful New York Rathiatra. Prabhupada also told him about the Mayapur project. We are just attempting a big planetarium in Mayapur. We have asked the government to acquire the land, 350 acres. That is negotiation going on. We shall give a Vedic planetarium. And Gurudas furnished some of the details. The planetarium will be 350 feet high and show the cosmology of the spiritual world. Prabhupada added, the construction will be like your Washington Capitol, like that. Oh, a big dome? George asked. Of course, George was English, but Prabhupada said, like your Washington Capitol, because somehow or another he was thinking he was American. But yes, estimated 8 crores of rupees, Prabhupada said. And then he offered him some more dal and fruit. George was grinning as he said, oh, very good. Oh, fantastic. Well, maybe just a little bit, but no. Well, that's fine. No, thank you. Okay, that's fine. That's enough. Fine. Prabhupada smiled. The watermelon you can give. It's just water. Prabhupada asked George if he was reading his books at all. George said that he was, mainly the Krishna book. Mukunda gave me the new books, but there's just so much to read. I don't know how anybody could have written it. It's difficult enough to read all that amount. Prabhupada acknowledged his appreciation. Sometimes they are surprised how one man can write so many books, but it is Krishna's grace, he said humbly. Otherwise, it's not possible. For a human being, it is not possible. As they chatted, Prabhupada ensured a steady flow of prasadam. Prajumna, give him a little of this. This one here. No, please, no more, George laughed. I'm really full. I won't have to eat for a few days. That was the signal for the finale. Sweets, Prabhupada said. George smiled and he conceded. Oh, very well. Sweet will help you digest, Prabhupada said. And to the server, he instructed, don't give him 3, at least 4. With George protesting that he wouldn't be able to eat so much more, Prabhupada explained, no, 3 is given to your enemy. According to our Indian system, if you give somebody 3, that means he's an enemy. George was a little surprised. Oh, really? I always like the number 3. While waiting to be served some fruit, Prabhupada listed 3 enemies, calm, crowd, and lobe, lust, anger, and greed. Yes, but there's lots of nice 3s, George said. And Prabhupada agreed. Yes, just like Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwar, or 3 worlds, Sankhya, Martya, Padma, Trinity. So these are nice things. George gallantly tackled the sweets. As he downed the last one, he declared, my compliments to the chef. While we cleared away the small tables and pots, Prabhupada thanked George for coming. So I am very much pleased that you have taken so much trouble to come here. So that was a very nice meeting, and that really is, you know, a good example of how to entertain your guests. Use prasadam and treat them nicely, and they become very happy. Now we'll look at how not to entertain your guests. So later in the year, we had gone down to Hyderabad, and we had just obtained the legal documents for taking over about 600 acres of land that was being donated to ISKCON. So Prabhupada had gone down there with the intention that he would begin a Varnashram community on this land. That was his intention. And what he did was that he decided we had all this land, and he had a plan that there would be small groupings of housing all around the land, maybe just like half a dozen or 10 houses, and in each little group there would be a small temple, either of Radha and Krishna or a Vishnu Murti, like that. And then the idea was that he would invite or attract the local village people that were living in the villages around the area to come to our land, and then by association with devotees, then they would want to become devotees themselves. And then he was going to offer them a house and a few acres of land. They could come and work the land, earn their living, and become devotees. So that was the whole scheme. So to do that, then he told the devotees that now you have a small program every evening on our land. You go out in the day, you invite the villagers, let them come, and then we'll have kirtan and prasadam, and you speak a little something, not much. But main thing is kirtan and prasadam. And in this way, you can begin to attract the local people to come and associate and, you know, cultivate this desire that they'll come and live on our land and become devotees. So on this particular, so the first day that he did it, it went quite well. Maybe about 150 villagers came, and it was quite nice. So the next day was December the 9th, 1976. And in the afternoon, in preparation for the program in the evening, Prabhupada had been thinking about something to say to the villagers. So he called Tejas Das in. Tejas Prabhu at that time, he had been the temple president in New Delhi, but when this scheme began, then he asked to be released from Delhi so that he could go and live on the farm there, because prior to his becoming a devotee, he had actually been a member of what was called the American Peace Corps. So in America in the early 60s, when they started the Vietnam War, because they were drafting all the young men to send them into the war, but many young men didn't want to go. So what they did was they created, instead of a war corps, they developed a peace corps. So the peace corps, they would be sent for 2 years to some place in the world and assist, you know, some third world country in development. So Tejas had actually been sent to India, and he had been sent down to South India. So he learnt Telugu, the local language. And at one point, he was actually in charge of about 10 different villages, showing them how to do crop rotation and how to increase the cultivation. So he already knew these things. So he came down with Prabhupada when we went down to Hyderabad. So Prabhupada called him into his room in the afternoon, and he dictated a short speech to Tejas to translate into Telugu and then read out tonight to the visitors. He said, "Everyone is thinking that to accept the existence of God is optional, but it is not optional. It is nature's way. Either you go back home, back to Godhead, or you stay and suffer in the cycle of repeated birth and death and rot in this material world." So that was Prabhupada's little speech, and Tejas translated that for the program. So as it turned out, the Pandal program didn't go too well. Only about half the number of people came, and the kirtan was very poor and unorganized, with little participation. Villagers were left aimlessly to mill around, and none of our men seemed to be taking much interest in them. Tejas gave his talk in Telugu, and then afterwards the prasadam was served out. Srila Prabhupada didn't go out, he stayed in his room, leaving it to his leaders to conduct the program, seemingly unaware of the situation outside. Yet, at about 8:30 p.m., he rang his bell. I went into his room, and he asked me to bring him some of the prasadam that was being served to our guests. I thought that it was a little unusual. Because of his delicate digestion, he never usually eats the general prasadam, preferring only that cooked by his own staff. Nor does he eat very much so late in the evening. So I sent one of the devotees out to get some of the prasadam, and then I placed it on Prabhupada's desk. It was just a large, coagulated lump of rice plonked onto a dusty leaf plate, and it tasted as bad as it looked. As soon as it touched Prabhupada's lips, he spat it out. "This is poison," he declared angrily, and he demanded to know who had cooked it. I thought that I'd better go out and find out for myself what was going on. After a few minutes looking around, I returned and gave him my report. The kirtan had finished. Large numbers of our guests were standing around looking bored and ignored, and no one would touch the prasadam. In fact, they had thrown it on the ground. It was so inedible that I saw that even the dogs were going up to it, sniffing it, and then walking off, refusing to eat it. I went round to the side of the goshala where the open-air kitchen was. A couple of pits, open-air pits, fire pits, with raised mud sides, blazed with ignited wood as deep metal woks balanced on the top. I was shocked as I recognized the cook. He was a sweeper that had been employed for cleaning the grounds and the toilets in the mornings. Now he stood with a beedi in his mouth, a cigarette, enough smoke curling from his mouth that it matched that was curling up from the fires that he was tending. One of the devotees told me that he had seen the fellow scoop off the top layer of rice, which was well cooked, and he had put that aside for himself and his family. Then he had sent a batch of the inedible clag to be offered for the deities. When I asked who was responsible for the arrangements, everyone said that Mahamsa was the only one that knew. And when I asked where Mahamsa was, nobody knew. Prabhupada was absolutely furious. He called in Jagadish, Hansaduta, and Tejas, and he demanded to know who was responsible for the bad program. He shouted at them, "The poison which was not fit for dogs to eat, we are giving to human beings. We are trying to attract them to come and live here with us, but once coming, they will never come again. They are coming for the tongue, not for hearing your sweet voice. If they want a sweet voice, they can listen to some woman, so your kirtan will not attract them. They are coming for the prasadam, and you are giving them poison cooked by a sweeper. Materially, it is impossible to eat, and spiritually, it has no value." He berated them for over half an hour. Achyuta Grudger, the farm manager, was also called. Prabhupada demanded to know why the prasadam was so poor, simply inedible rice. Achyuta Grudger apologized, saying that he didn't have enough money for proper prasadam. Prabhupada then asked why he didn't come to Jagadish, and then he demanded to know from Jagadish why he didn't supply the money. Jagadish, along with the others, was silent. They all hung their heads with little to say. No one seemed to want to take responsibility, and all saying that everything seemed to depend on Mahamsa's presence, and without him, it was difficult to get anything done. Prabhupada was extremely annoyed with Mahamsa because he had still not returned from the city, and now it was 10 o'clock. When I was at the city temple, they said he was at the farm. Now I'm at the farm, they say, oh, he's at the temple. And when I ask why these things are going on, nobody but Mahamsa knows. Finally, after letting them all know that he holds all of them responsible, he sent everyone out and took rest. Mahamsa eventually arrived after 11 p.m., and along with him, he brought a surprise visitor, Harikesh Swami. He had come directly from Germany, where he's working on the impending legal cases that have been mounted against us after police raids in 1975 on the Schloss Retterschof and other centers in Germany. He intends to spend the next 3 days going over the details of the cases with Hansaduta Swami so that he can prepare our defense. So they were both sent to rest, and Prabhupada said that he would see them in the morning. So the next morning was December the 10th. Today is the disappearance day of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Prabhupada, and we are observing a half-day fast. Early in the morning at 6 a.m., Prabhupada called in Mahamsa along with the other senior men. He preached to him that things must be organized in a proper fashion, otherwise everything will be a failure. He told him, "I am not prepared to invest anything here if things continue as they are. You must make immediate plans for irrigation and vegetable and sugarcane crops." Then he took up last night's disaster and he told him, "No one will come here because we are allowing a sweeper to cook." He was very grave. "It has shocked my heart that you can allow a sweeper to cook and then offer such things to Krishna. We say that you must be second initiated, but you are allowing a sweeper to cook. This means that after 7 years, you are still a Malacha, Yavana." Mahamsa had been a devotee for 7 years, and as I mentioned, he had come from this Malacha background, the Parsi community, as we did. But "your consciousness has not changed. We are saying Radhikara Pakaana Vivija Bhyanjana Parama Anande Krishna Korena Bhojana. Radhika and her gopi friends are personally cooking and making such nice arrangements for giving very palatable foodstuffs simply for the pleasure of Krishna, and you are offering things cooked by a sweeper." Mahamsa was apologetic. He told Srila Prabhupada that he was unable to find any devotee to do the cooking, and thus he had hired the sweeper. In fact, Mahamsa was largely unaware of who was cooking. He had gone to the city to finalize the legal documents for the formation of the new trust for the land before Srila Prabhupada departs, and he had left Achyuta Grudger to organize at the farm. Achyuta Grudger had foolishly engaged the hired sweeper, but Mahamsa was overall in charge, and Prabhupada held him responsible. Prabhupada had told him previously that he is not all-pervasive like Krishna. Yet if he is not personally present, nothing seems to go on properly. So this was the thing, that Mahamsa couldn't be everywhere at once, and yet if he wasn't there, nothing happened. So he'd not learnt this art of delegating responsibility to other devotees. If he wasn't there, then nothing happened. So, he is neither competent to manage everything himself, nor is he competent to train others to manage things properly. With displays like yesterday's, Srila Prabhupada is becoming increasingly dissatisfied. Similarly, both Hansaduta and Tejas were present at the lethargic program, but they also did not check the details of the arrangements. Prabhupada spoke to the small assembly. "You are all dead men," he said. "Dead men cannot preach. Whatever preaching there is will all be finished. The first principle of preaching is utsaha, enthusiasm. And without this enthusiasm, nothing will go on." So that was in the morning. Then Prabhupada dropped it. We had a nice program during the day for Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's disappearance. And then in the evening, then again, Srila Prabhupada met with the senior men. So in order to improve this evening's program, a small stage and a shamayana had been set up, along with amplification, and the whole area was illuminated with floodlights. Gradually, people started coming, and by 8 p.m., about 150 villagers had gathered, about a third of them children. The children were very enthusiastic, chanting with abandon under the encouragement of our devotees. It's likely that they have never seen so many white people before in one place, and what to speak about in dhotis with kurtas and shaved heads, and sikhas and tilak. Then after bhajans and a slideshow, prasadam of rice and dal was served. As the devotees and the children chanted, "Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare," and and "Govinda Jaya Jaya, Gopala Jaya Jaya," with great energy and enthusiasm, Srila Prabhupada met with Jagadish Prabhu in his house. He emphasized again and again the need to provide very nice, palatable prasadam. He told us that this was the crux of his plan to spread Krishna consciousness throughout the area. We shall spend for that. Why miserly? There is no need of miserly. You are going to earn money by agricultural produce, so how will that money be utilized? It will be utilized for Krishna's purpose, by prasadam, by chanting, by drama, but somehow or another bring them. That is our mission. Congregational chanting. Always a festival. And we shall spend for that. Immediately arrange. If there is a scarcity of money, I shall pay. But bring them somehow or another. Tomorrow I want at least 500 men attending. I came here to see that, not to sit down in my room peacefully. Referring to the upcoming Gita Pratishthan meeting in Wardha, this was a meeting that Prabhupada was going to attend after leaving Hyderabad. He said, there also we shall inform that meeting that we want to propagate this Krishna consciousness movement town to town, village to village, by attracting them with musical demonstration of Sankirtan, dramatic play, movie, and prasadam. Somehow or another, they should come to the temple, to the pandal, and congregationally chant Hare Krishna, Maha Mantra, hear the Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam. And for this purpose, whatever expenditure is required, you should collect it and spend. This is the scheme of this Hare Krishna movement. For those who are educated, he recommended distribution of literature and scholarly presentations in schools, colleges, and universities. Taking assurance from Jagadish that he understood, he repeated his main point. To attract them to really nice prasadam, palatable food, we shall spend. Where is the difficulty? We shall take contribution from rich persons. We shall earn ourselves, and we shall spend it to give them very nice prasadam. As people come to join us, he said that they could be encouraged in growing their own food, making their own houses, and making their own cloth. As soon as they understand, then they will be glad to do it. And they will stop all this nonsense, illicit sex, meat eating. And then their life will be purified. And they will make more and more advancement in this path. That is perfection, and that is our mission. He pointed out that people travel miles to get a good meal from a restaurant or a hotel. And we cannot give them nice Krishna prasadam, he asked. Why? Why you cannot give? Arrange like that, first class. Simply for eating they will come. Immediately you do it. When Jagadish asked what sort of prasadam we should give, Prabhupada told him, give them nice prasadam by which they are attracted. It doesn't matter, khichdi, puri, kachuri, laddu, whatever they are attracted, then you give. Krishna prasadam, it doesn't matter. Don't waste, give them nice palatable foodstuffs. Give them one finest kachuri, one nice samosa, two puris. They will be very glad. Make very, very nice prasadam. He was still agitated by last night's fiasco. What is this rubbish that the dog cannot eat even? They have done a great mistake. All rascals. I am very angry. I say that if you have got no money, I will spend. I will give you money. Why you should make such 10th class and no food at all? It is to be thrown away. Simply waste of grains and energy. Engage a nice professional cook. Prepare nice foodstuffs. I shall spend for that if you have no money. Gentlemen who are coming must immediately be offered some prasadam. Please come here. Take puri, kachuri, samosa. The poor arrangement for the pandal was not the only incident of bad management. Prabhupada referred to a disturbing incident several days ago when Dr. Singha Ghosh had come to massage him. So this man, Dr. Singha Ghosh, he had like a health resort place. He was a physiotherapist. And he had a place in some hill station further south called Kodai Canal. It's a famous place in India. Many people go there for their health. So this man, he was such a good physiotherapist that he was actually the person, the personal doctor of the Nehru family, Indira Gandhi and her father and like that, so many of them. So he was he had heard about Prabhupada. He'd come to see him previously in August. He liked him very much. He saw Prabhupada was not well. So he volunteered even though he's extremely busy, he came to the farm in December, and for a few days he was giving Srila Prabhupada this very special massage that he did, and Prabhupada liked it very much. But when he came, then Prabhupada was saying, the doctor, he comes out of love, but there is no prasadam. What is this? The doctor comes, but we cannot supply him prasadam at 12 o'clock in the day. He was very upset. There was nothing there for him to eat. Prabhupada reiterated the standard that he had told his managers in Vrindavan previously to maintain. Prasadam, as soon as they want, they must be fed some prasadam according to the position of the person. We shall spend for that. I am not hesitating to spend money, so why the arrangement is lacking? Immediately you arrange for theirs and invite them. Do not make it childish. I want to see tomorrow many thousands of people. If you cannot make attractive, then why will they come? Then it is a failure. So you make attractive. Whatever money is required, I shall pay. Simply theory will not help. So much make such prasadam as people will come and be mad after it. He asked for his other leaders who were still engaged at the kirtan, asking Jagadish whether he had written everything down so that he could repeat it to the others. Jagadish assured him that he had recorded it on tape, and then he went off to bring the other leaders in. The chanting stopped and Mahamsa Swami entered with several other men. Prabhupada spoke to him frankly and firmly, again stressing the same points. He asked Mahamsa if he was satisfied with the turnout this evening. Mahamsa admitted that he was not. Then, Prabhupada asked pointedly, Mahamsa again excused the poor arrangements. No, well, the people also, there was no advertisement that today there would be a program. So whatever is required, you do it, Prabhupada told him. You give them very, very first-class prasadam. They will come for the tongue. Mahamsa nodded in agreement. He told Prabhupada that the local villagers like their food very spicy. Whatever they like, I do not know what they like, Prabhupada replied, but you prepare that they should come and eat. Whatever it may be, whatever they like, the villagers, you prepare. If you have no money, I shall pay the money, but attract them. They will come here to eat. Oh, very nice thing, and this is wanted. He told us that the whole beginning of his creation of ISKCON was on the basis of prasadam. I made this movement successful simply by this love feast. They did not come to hear Hare Krishna, they came for the love feast. From the very beginning, when I was in that 26 Second Avenue, every Sunday I was giving very nice foodstuff, at least 200 men. That was at the beginning, and Prabhupada was the only cook. He was cooking personally for 200 people every week. He relaxed a bit and he reminisced about his early followers. Daily at least more than 15 or 20 men I was cooking myself. That is the beginning of my movement. The chapatis with Kirtananda, first of all he was taking one or two, then 12. As we all left and Prabhupada's slight frame shook with mirth, he recalled a story that he is especially fond of. There was another boy, Stridish, 22 chapatis. Stridish, can I give you? Yes. I gave him 4. Finished. Stridish, can I give you? Yes. Prabhupada laughed in fond remembrance. Very nice boy. He was eating 22. One day there was no money, so he immediately went. And then he came after some time with some money. And where did you go? Oh, the shoe booth. So he had polished the shoes and then brought the money. Laughing again, he told us that this was how his movement had developed. Repeatedly, he told Mahamsa that providing palatable prasadam was the primary concern. Telling him to hire a first-class cook and assuring him of sufficient money, he said, so long I am living, I will go on paying. You don't be miserly. Bring devotees for eating, and then chanting, then cinema, then lecture, and in this way you have to develop. Not that people will come, Hare Krishna mantra is there, or let us go away. They will not come. What do they know about Hare Krishna? They will come. Oh, there is nice, good prasadam distributed. Mahamsa, as compliant as ever, ventured to mention last night's failure, somehow not quite grasping the reality. Some people I know, they said that yesterday the prasadam was not nice. And there was Prabhupada's blunt but controlled retort, cut him off. Not nice. It was not eatable even by the dogs. But you are less than the dogs if you prepare such things. I was surprised. You allowed a sweeper to cook. I was surprised. We have distribution prasadam, not dog's food. Such rascals are here, you do not know. I do not wish to discuss on this point anymore. You have murdered the whole thing in 2 days. Now, if possible, you bring then first-class prasadam, very palatable. Foodstuff means that one has no appetite, he'll eat. That is food. Not that one has got appetite and then he'll forget. No, that is not food. He told him to grow crops like sugarcane and rice to make money for the programs. Mahamsa has spent a lot of money so far, but for no return. And Prabhupada told him to manage like a businessman. He invests money, he gets a return. Spend for Krishna. That is wanted. There is no question of becoming a miser. I never did it. Whenever I got that farthing, I wanted to spend it. Immediately spend it. Oh, I have made this BBT, so immediately 50% for printing and 50% for spreading this movement. Easing off a bit, Prabhupada told him, so whatever is done, now do it very nicely. I want to see that at least 1,000 men are coming from the villages. Mahamsa asked if he could announce that Srila Prabhupada would be at the pandal. Prabhupada didn't think that was important, but he agreed that if it was necessary, then he was happy to attend. But his point remained the same. People will come for the satisfaction of their tongues. In the south, people are noted for making many varieties of rice. So he told Mahamsa to prepare such things. You do not make this paramana, kichrana, pushpana. There are varieties of rice preparations. So they know this, the southern people, with curd, yogurt, tamarind, so many preparations. So you make like that. Why dog eating? They are not dogs. You cannot expect, because you were giving some dog-eatable food, that they will come. He said that they should have one first-class cook, and all of our men should learn from him. Not that our men simply chant and do nothing. There is no need of simply keeping unduly. Hare Krishna, Krishna, and sleeping. We don't want such men making a show and do not know how to do anything to preach. Useless. He said that the married women especially should be engaged in cooking. I have said many times, all the children should be taken in a room by one woman and the others should be engaged in the cooking department. I have seen it in your country, America, when they all go to the church, then all the children are gathered together in a room, is it not? We agreed that it was so. And one or two men can take care, and the others, they go. Not that everyone is children busy. Oh, I cannot do. What is the use of keeping such householders? Then let them live outside and earn their money. The women's business is to cleanse, to cut the vegetables and to cook. What is this, that they are simply busy with children? He cited the same excellent example that he had given this morning, that of the gopis. You should organize Radhikara Pakaana Vivija Bhyanjana. All of the gopis, they are engaged for cooking for Krishna. Mother Jasoda will call them. Now you young girls, you can cook very nicely. Radhika and her friends, they are cooking. And they cook so nicely that Parama Ananda Krishna Karina Bhojana, that with great pleasure Krishna is eating. And that we have to distribute, not dog's food. You do not know what is the purpose of this mission. Here is a good chance. Don't spoil it. Produce food. Make profit. You spend for Krishna. Train all the devotees how to cook. All women. Don't distribute the dog's eatable things. Krishna prasadam. So, Radhikara Pakaana Vivija Bhyanjana Parama Anande Krishna Karena Bhojana. Krishna is taking with great pleasure. That prasadam you have to distribute. Not that the dog is rejecting and you distribute that prasadam. Why do you think like that? This prasadam, this so-called rubbish thing, which is rejected by the dog, and you are offering to a human being? You do it. If you have no money, I shall pay. There is no question of scarcity of money. Don't spoil money, but spend it for the real purpose. That is all. So, that was a memorable episode. You can see how much Prabhupada was stressing again and again and again. Give them nice, palatable foodstuff, something which everybody, even if he has no appetite, he'll eat it. Not that you give them such rubbish that even if they have an appetite, then they reject it and go away. So this was Prabhupada's whole movement, as he said there. In the beginning, in 26 second afternoon, all he was doing, practically, he was cooking. That's all. Every day, 15, 20 men would come and he would serve them. He would personally cook, he would personally serve them. And then as soon as he had an opportunity, then he began to train them up. I think Kit Ananda was taught how to make chapatis. And then other devotees took up different preparations. And the whole movement practically began to spread on the basis of prasadam. And Prabhupada, you know, and then you see that Prabhupada makes that contrast. We think, you know, we're just making some food. But actually, in the spiritual world, this is one of the main engagements of the highest level of devotee, the gopis. Nobody has more love for Krishna than the gopis. And this is what they do. They cook for Krishna. They make nice palatable foodstuffs. They offer it with love to Krishna. And it is so irresistible that Krishna gets great pleasure from it. Therefore, he was saying, don't give them this stuff that even a dog can't eat. Yeah. Cook with the consciousness that you're doing it for Krishna. It's prasadam. And then when you distribute that, then immediately people will be attracted. They cannot fail to be attracted by it. So, it's 7:45. There's many other things. And we'll continue with this prasadam seminar tomorrow. At what time are we going to do it tomorrow?
6 o'clock? 6 o'clock.
Okay. So, yes, in the evening. Yes, not the morning. In the morning we'll be having the regular program and Bhagavatam class. And in the evening at 6 o'clock, then we'll gather and we'll continue on with these prasadam pastimes of Srila Prabhupada. So any questions before we distribute prasadam? Anybody has any questions at all? Or comments? Yes?
A small question regarding the prasadam. I noticed that many times in the temples, the prasadam is not really... Everything is more or less deep fried and stuff like that, at least when the festivals are. And it's really... Sometimes it's hard on the stomach and... I can hear incidents of devotees who are having problems with digestion after eating so much halava and stuff like that. So how should we take this?
Well, I also don't eat deep fried stuff. My liver is, after 33 years of, you know, heavy prasadam, my liver's protesting. But you'll see there that Prabhupada, when he was talking about the kinds of foodstuffs, what did he say? Samosas, puris, kachuris, ladu. These things are all ghee. Ghee is okay, but in moderation. There's nothing wrong with that. But you also have to be moderate in how you eat. And then it'll be alright. I mean, you can't make prasadam without making some deep fried things. You know, this is what pleases Krishna. The description is there in that same verse that Prabhupada kept quoting, Radhikara Pakaana Vividyabhyanjana. There's a description there of all the different things that the gopis are cooking for Krishna. Lots of them are deep fried. So, deep fried is okay, but don't eat too much, that's all. Moderate. Balance it. I remember when I first became a devotee, it was very fashionable in the Sydney temple in those days. Everybody loved halava. Somehow or another, when you first become a devotee, halava is the thing that gets you, you know. Hot halava with raisins and ghee dripping out of it, and, you know, like this. So we used to have, we used to go out on Sankirtan every day. We'd go chanting in downtown Sydney. And then we would come back, we'd have lunch, very elaborate lunch. Then again, we'd go out for chanting another 3-4 hours. And then in the afternoon, we would come back. And then we had, because there was the regular offerings, scheduled offerings for Radha Gopinath. But we used to have what was called the Brahmachari offering. So all the, you know, Brahmacharis, we were all young men, we were ravenous, you know. So we'd come back after a day on Sankirtan, and then we'd line up in the hallway, and then the cooks would make a special pot of hot halava. And this was called the Brahmachari offering. And then we would have our bowls, we'd have huge bowls. There was one boy, his name was Back to Bernard. He, one time, I remember, on a Sunday feast, he had 13 bowls of halava. Big, like this. Just halava, nothing else. And then he stashed another 6 bowls for the next day. He hid them away so nobody else would get them. And then, so then in the morning he could have another 6 bowls of halava. So that's how we used to be, but it's not surprising. I mean, I used to eat, I remember, one time I had, I think, how many was it? 6 plates of prasadam on Sunday afternoon. Big, heaped up. And, you know, I kind of been building up. I started 1 and then 2 and then, you know, 3. And, you know, the Sunday feast was, you know, the event of the week. That's what kept everybody from blooping. You know, if you were struggling sometimes, you know, because it was hard when you first move into the temple, you know, so many restrictions and getting up in the morning. So this was what kept you in the temple, was the Sunday feast. You know, you think about leaving, but then, oh, well, the Sunday feast is coming. You know? I'll stay for the Sunday feast at least, and then I'll go. But you never went. So we were building up, and I remember 2 or 3 plates regularly every Sunday. And then 1 week, I really overdid it, and I had 6 plates of prasadam. And I remember I had so much prasadam, I actually felt like not my insides were going to burst. I got indigestion so bad, and the pain was so much, I thought if this continues, I'm going to drop dead. So that kind of, you know, it was a warning. So then after that, I only ate 3 plates. Now I only have, you know, 1 plate, small, because I've learnt my lesson. But when you're young, you know, you think that you're indestructible. When you're a little older, you realize actually you have to look after your body a bit. So it's nice, you know, deep fried, but don't eat too much. Any other questions?